For preaching, this is my favorite time of the year, because I get to the end of that real long series that I've gone through, and now I get to just talk about things that I would like to talk about. And it's during a period of time that the world's thoughts turn to the birth of Jesus, and there's more focus on Jesus right now across the world than any other time in the world. It's interesting, though, because it happens during a period of time that Jesus was not born. Our best estimate is that Jesus was probably born in the spring rather than in the wintertime. So how do we come up with this notion of December 25th being Christmas, the birth of Jesus? And the answer for that is that it was a pagan celebration. And in our group of people here, we have some people who observe Christmas as a religious holiday, and we have some people who think you should not do that at all. And some people will observe it as a government holiday, but they won't reserve it in or won't observe it in any way religious. And you know, whatever you choose to do is fine. And I'll tell you why in just a couple of minutes. I have a friend, and at a holiday that is steeped in even more suspicion than anything connected to the paganism of Christmas is Halloween. And there are people who have opinions about Halloween as well. Some folks say, boy, because of the evil associated with that, we can have nothing to do with that. That's all about darkness, all about black, and it's a bad thing. But remember that a lot of things have a pagan past. And, I mean, you can be as consistent as you would like to be with that. There are, for example, I don't have any problem going in to a place that serves alcohol to eat a meal, because I have a very clear opinion about me and alcohol. And my opinion is that I like it a lot and that it's really destructive to me. And it will never pass my lips again. And every day of my life, I make the choice that that's never going to happen again. But I don't have any problem eating where other people drink it. But there are other folks who say, well, I would never go into a place that serves alcohol. Well, good for you. You know, and at times, I'll see you where you're eating, and there'll be times you never see me where I eat because you won't go to the same place I go. That's okay. That's your choice. As long as you're not doing something sinful in what you're doing, you know, and here's the bigger problem and the more likely problem. You and I could both be going to our places, a place that serves alcohol and a place that doesn't, and getting involved in gluttony. And that's probably way more likely than either one of us getting plastered. And so, you know, if we're going to draw lines, we need to draw lines accurately. But we make decisions for ourselves. We do those things as Christians, and I trust that you as a Christian do that based upon your convictions about the proper way for you to follow God, and that you've taken into consideration, when I do this, I need to be God-honoring in the process. But lots and lots of things have pagan pasts. For example, wearing white at a wedding. If you wear white at a wedding, that comes from paganism. And so if you can't do anything that has a pagan past, then you need to pick a new color. Or having a wedding ring. Or calling Monday Monday. or Tuesday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, Wednesday, or January, January, or February, February. You see, they all have pagan pasts. Now, does that mean that all of the rest of the world says, hey, I'll meet you at Chick-fil-A, because we don't have that around there, but they espouse Christian virtue. I'll meet you at Chick-fil-A on the third day of the week, the second day after the weekend, but neither of us will call it by name, all right? Or do we just say, I'll see you Tuesday at Chick-fil-A. You can make it as hard or as easy as you would like. And by your conscience, you need to live. Okay? It's important you do that. And one thing that I praise God for almost every day of my life is that we have people of divergent opinion in this place that respect each other so much that they don't bind their opinion on the next person. And that's a huge thing. Because if it weren't, you'd all be wearing longhorns. Right? So if we're going to bind our opinions on each other, then you have to figure out which one. And I have, remember that the horns are at the altar of God, and that Jayhawks are a terrorist group, and Sooners cheated to get into Oklahoma. So, I mean, there's all kinds of rationale that I can use to come up with, but we have to be tolerant of each other and recognize when we're playing mental gymnastics with things. Halloween is not about darkness and evil. Little kids that want to dress up as Little Mermaid or Spider-Man or Batman, they just want to beat on doors and get candy. They're not interested in, ooh, if I do this, I'm worshiping the occult. Never crosses their mind. So for them, Halloween is innocence. Well, you know, if something's innocent, that's pretty good, isn't it? And if something started as evil, but we can do something that brings innocence to it, isn't that a positive thing? In fact, what the Scripture describes that as is they call that redemption. Redemption is when you take a slave, which is evil, and you make it free. And so while Halloween, for example, began as an evil, we have redeemed it, given it to little children, and made it innocent. In fact, the reason we call it Halloween is it was All Hallows' Eve. It was the time that people in Christendom said, boy, this used to be evil, but let's do something good with it. Let's celebrate hallowed ones. And so it comes for Christians who are trying to redeem evil and bring it back to the light. And what happens with light and darkness? I mean, remember how that works anyway, right? If you take a candle into the darkest room, do you see the darkness or the candle? Light always trumps darkness. Is that right? Always. And so no matter what evil exists in the world, bring righteousness to it. Bring holiness to it. And trump the evil. Consider history and reality in our spiritual journey. You'd be amazed by the number of things that we interact with all of the time, every single day, that have pagan history. The names of the month, the days of the names of the days of the week, Christmas, Easter, weddings, wedding rings, even weddings themselves. Early Christians didn't have a ceremony. Pagans had the ceremonies. They had fertility ceremonies. That's what weddings are actually about, is their fertility ceremonies. And we don't think about them that way because we've brought something good to that. But their origin comes out of something that's very, very different than we celebrate today. A wedding ring, gravestones, personal names like Diana and Sophia. We've got all kinds of names that have origins in darkness. The symbols on our currency, you know, and if you're going to draw lines to where you can have absolutely nothing pagan, if you want to empty your wallets and give them to me, that'll be fine. I'm willing to put up with a little bit of paganism on my coinage in order to have the coinage. I mean, all of this stuff exists out there. And if you were to refuse to take part with any of it, I don't know how you'd live in the world. I don't know what you would do. There's a religious group known as Jehovah Witnesses, and they don't get they're against all celebrations. They don't celebrate birthdays, they don't celebrate Christmas, they don't celebrate any holidays. They're all about not doing that. But they had to draw a line. There was a time in their attempts to be consistent that they were going to create their own calendar and replace the month names and the days of the week and everything else to get away from paganism. How effective would that be? Can you imagine trying to make a doctor's appointment if you used a different calendar? And so pretty soon they looked at it and said, there's no way this will work. And so they gave it up. But they still don't celebrate any kind of celebration. If you're going to avoid all paganism, you can't take flowers to a loved one. You can't embalm anybody because the Egyptians embalmed people. You can't cremate anybody because the Druids in Europe cremated people. So your back room in your house is going to be smelly and really stacked up before long. If you don't have any process to do anything because somebody did it wrong before you. We can't use that logic. It doesn't work. And we're far better off to look at it in a different way. Jesus called on early disciples. Remember Matthew chapter 10 and verse 16? He said, I want to urge you to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Now that was about use your brain and be as innocent as you can be. Now if you take that principle, and it's a really good one, I don't know why I don't preach about it very often, but it's a really, really good principle, and you use that the way early Christians did, then you do the same thing we're talking about. They took what were pagan celebrations and they said, there are things that are valuable to us. We know that you think about this day. Let us tell you about your God. Paul did this when he came into Athens, remember? And he ran across this little stone that said, this is the altar to the God that we may have forgotten. They called it the unknown God, the one that we don't even know about because we don't want to tick him off. And so they had this stone. And Paul said, I know that God. Let me tell you about him. Now, did Paul believe that God was the unknown God? Or was Paul saying, let me be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove and use what they're already thinking and blow their minds up around it. Expand that out and make them think differently. And so early Christians did the same thing with some of these celebrations, and they do have their origins in false things. And I won't argue with you about that. If you come into my house, you'll notice this time of year that there's a Christmas tree up. And somebody says, whoa, you can't have a Christmas tree because that's a pagan symbol and you can't be involved in that pagan symbol. That's a pagan symbol. That belongs to paganism. That's not right. I paid $190 for that. It belongs to me. It used to belong to paganism, but I redeemed it. And it stands for something else in my house. And so while it might have been bad at one time, it's not bad now because I'm not bad now. Does that make sense? And so we have to learn to redeem things. And bring them to the light, or bring, actually, you're bringing light to them. Here's my concern. I think too often in our world, the way we function as Christians is we function out of a fear and withdrawal mode. We say, ooh, I can't be around that. I can't do that. As though we're fearful or something. Let's not be fearful. Now, I'm not saying that you ought to participate in the deeds of darkness. If you're hearing that, you're not hearing what I'm saying. I'm saying take light to darkness. And say, no, that's not what this is now. It's no different than someone taking a song that is secular and putting religious words to it. Remember how they took the words to Amazing Grace and put it to the Pepsi theme song? I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. There's nothing wrong with that. It's okay to take light to anything. Someone says, no, it's not. Can't do that. How do you explain Jesus? Now, I'm going to tell you a quick story. There's a big party. The guy that's throwing the party is notorious for being a cheat. And he sees Jesus and he's intrigued by him and he says, I'd like you to come to my house. And Jesus said, boy, what are we going to do? And he says, we're going to have a big party and we're going to eat together. Jesus said, okay, I'll do that. He says, I'm going to invite some of the people around me. See, that'll be great. Who's going to be there? Well, it'll mainly be whores and other tax gatherers. Mainly. Jesus said, what time shall I come? Now, if it were you, you might say, whoa, I can't go. Well, are you being more like Jesus or are you being more like the Pharisees who said, no, we're not going? And not only are we not going, we don't think you ought to go. Well, if you do that, you destroy a fellow by the name of Matthew, who ended up being a pretty good guy. See, we have to go back and look at these stories and say, what do they really mean? What are they telling us? And Jesus is telling us by his arrival on the earth, and he came at the darkest of times. He's telling us by his arrival on earth, now's a good time for light to be here. You know, in our history, the atrocities that went on when Eastern Europe fell is probably as bad as any time in the history of man. The rape camps, the mass murders, they're still digging up graves and pulling people out, trying to identify from 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago who these folks are in mass graves of hundreds of people. And that's tough. But at the time that Jesus was born, in fact, just before the time Jesus was born, Israel went through a very similar time. The man who is known as the Hitler of antiquity lived right before Jesus. And he came into the city of Jerusalem, and his name was Antiochus. He was a son of Alexander the Great. Or one of the successors. And he carves up the area, and he takes Jerusalem. He's one of the sons, and he takes Israel. And he was frustrated by his military defeats in all kinds of places. He wasn't very good at what he did. But he had Israel. So what he did in Israel was he decided to take all of his frustration out on that nation. And he transformed the temple that had been built in the city of Jerusalem to replace Solomon's temple into a temple to Zeus. And he proclaimed himself God incarnate and demanded that everyone in the land worship him. He forced young Jewish boys to undergo reverse circumcision. Now, you'll want to go look that up. He flogged the aged priests in the temple to death for refusing to eat pork. And in one of his most notorious acts of all, he sacrificed a pig on the altar of God and spread its blood all throughout the temple. And the Jews blew up. And you have what we know as the Maccabean Revolt. And that's where they went outside of the city. They got up on the isolated hill. They built themselves a fortress. And they committed suicide rather than give in to the army. Jerusalem was the Sarajevo of their day. And at the time that God sends Jesus, everybody is looking for a Redeemer. See, it's so miserable that everybody's looking And I find interesting the names that are given to Jesus. Fred read that his name will be called Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. The name Jesus is the Savior. But what's the name that the angels say that Jesus will be called? Remember? Emmanuel. What's that mean? God with us. When people are living in a Sarajevo-like condition, what is it that they believe about God? My God, why have you abandoned us? And God says in this story that we read, and people reflect upon this time of the year, God says, announced by angels in heaven, his name is going to be, we're going to recognize that God is here. We're going to know that. And how are you going to know it? Well, he's going to bring light to all darkness. And everywhere he goes, he will redeem from darkness and bring to light. In every place. Let me make this suggestion to you as God's child. The mission that God gave Jesus is the same mission that he has given to every child of his. We all do the same thing Jesus did. In fact, if you want to really think about it, go to the first chapter of the book of Acts. And in the introduction to the book of Acts, what he says is this. He says, this is the second account that I've written to you, O excellent Theophilus, about all of the things that Jesus began to do and to teach. What's the second book about? It's about how God's people continue to do and to teach, just like their Jesus. We have the same mission. It's not different. We're supposed to bring light to darkness. We're supposed to be the presence of God wherever we go. Someone says, oh, you're putting too much on Christians. Not so. Who is in you? Your body is a temple of what? The Holy Spirit who is in you. So every place that you move in the world, what do? You bring God to that place. Every action that you take is an act of the presence of God. Because you can go nowhere that he is not there. And that's why it's so important we act right. Because we are his representative in every place. And so we must be as compassionate as he is. And we must be as forgiving as he is. And we must stand for right as he did. But we must redeem from darkness those things that God created and at the end of the creation looked upon it and said, this is very good. And it was only the corruption that was introduced in the garden that made any bad things come. And what was the commission of Adam and Eve? I send you out into the world and you are to subdue it. What's the mission? The mission is for us to bring the presence of God to everything. Now, if you want to observe Christmas or you don't, I don't really care. Doesn't matter to me. In the book of Colossians, what Paul tells early Christians is there are people who tell you that you will be more religious if you do not handle, do not touch, do not taste. He says, but the reality is that outward commands about behaviors have little impact on the holiness of the inside. And he talks about this do not handle, do not touch, do not taste concept and says, it doesn't really work. But if you don't want to handle, and let me point out, I'm not going to handle alcohol. I'm not going to touch it, and I'm not going to taste it. For me, I can't do that. And that is the only method I know by which I can stay pure. So I will not do it. But that's my rule for me. Not my rule for you. But Paul says that there are some people to whom new moons mean something. And there are some people for whom this means something or that means something. He says, don't criticize anybody for it. Let them have it. But be serious about your mission. That's what Colossians 2 is all about. We confuse that sometimes. And so, what I really, really want to get across to you as you think about this Christmas story, that you put it in the context of what was going on at the time. Jace is just past the age of the male child that would not have been killed. Anybody younger than him would have died. So were it happening today, Peyton wouldn't have a little brother. Because the obligation that Richard and Shelley would have is to take their grandchild out and say, here he is, and a Roman soldier would have disemboweled him. And it was at that period of time that God says, if there's any point in the history of man that light needs to be, it is now. Remember what Galatians 4 says? In the fullness of time, God sent forth His Son. At the proper time, God sent forth His Son, born of a woman, born under the law, so that He might redeem those, pull back from darkness, those who were tied to the law. Your task is to redeem in every place you walk. We want you this year to see God's law as helpful to you, to understand your task. Your task is so much more than not using an instrument in worship, than partaking of the Lord's Supper, than praying in an assembly, than, I mean, if that was your task, how superficial would God be if that was the task? How ridiculous would this be if that were the task? The task is so much more than that. The task is so much more important than those things. Now, are those things evil? No. But remember, I'm the guy that likes Christmas trees. Okay? But no, they're not evil. Do them and that's and Godspeed, and that's wonderful. But don't think that's the will of God. The will of God is your presence in a land of darkness to be light. That's really what you're about. So have your eyes opened up to the ways of God, and then be seen by God through eyes of grace and mercy, loving kindness, tenderness, and to know that's how He sees you. And then walk in a path that's devoted to His purpose and His way. If we can help you be like Jesus today, all you need to do is come as together we stand and sing. And Orrin, you're going to have to hit that.